Prem Shri Ghoshi Krishna Chaitanya Pabanichananda Shri Dwaita Gadadhar Shri Vasati Gaura Vaktamani Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopina Shamakanda Radha Kanda Giri Gaurana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai Navajit Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Gangamai Jumuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samavecha Bhaktavinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanand Ki Jai All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasthaya Bhutalashi Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devi. Gauravani Pacharane Navasesa Sindhavani Paskatyade Sutarane Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vashnavam Sta Sri Rupam Sahagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Samsajivam Sadvaitam Sadvaitam Padijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Sta Panchakapa Chubhishta Kripasindhavyavata Ptichanam Pavaneva Vaishnavi Namo Namaha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
May 27, 2016, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1. Chapter 13, Dhritarashtra quits home, text 45. Do any of you have books? Tasma janga vai lavyam.
Tasma janga
vai lavyam. I'm sorry. Vaik lavyam. Ajana kritamatmana.
Ajana kritamatmana.
Katam tuan ata kripana.
Katam tuan ata kripana.
Vartirams te chamam vina.
Vartirams te chamam vina.
Tasmaja anga vaiklavyam.
Tasmaja anga vaiklavyam.
Agyana kritamatmana.
Agyana kritamatmana.
Katam tuanata kripana.
Katam tuanata kripana.
Vartirams te chamam vina.
Vartirams te chamam vina.
Tisha?
Therefore.
Jahi.
Jahi.
Give up.
Give up.
Anga.
Anga.
O king.
O king.
Vaiklavyam.
Vaiklavyam.
Mental disparity.
Mental disparity.
Agyana.
Agyana.
Ignorance.
Ignorance.
Kritam. Due to
Atmana
of yourself. Katam.
How.
To.
But.
Anataha.
Anataha.
Helpless.
Helpless.
Kripanaha.
Kripanaha.
Poor creatures.
Poor creatures.
Bhartiran. Be able to survive.
Be able to survive.
Te.
Te.
They.
They.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Mam.
Me.
Me.
Vina.
Without.
Without.
So this is Narada Muni speaking to King Yudhisthira, who was very concerned when he couldn't find Dhritarashtra and Gandhari or Vidura. That where have they gone? They're dependent on me. They're my elders. I'm supposed to take care of them. Dhritarashtra is blind. Gandhari's lost all of her children. What will they do? What will they do without me? What will they do without me? So, translation. Therefore, give up your anxiety due to ignorance of the self. You are now thinking of how they, who are helpless, poor creatures, will exist without you, purport by Srila Prabhupada. When we think of our kith and kin as being helpless and dependent on us, it is all due to ignorance. Every living creature is allowed all protection by the order of the Supreme Lord in terms of each one's acquired position in the world. The Lord is known as Bhutabrit, one who gives protection to all living beings. One should discharge his duties only, for no one but the Supreme Lord can give protection to anyone else. This is explained more clearly in the following verses. Tasma jayanga vaiklavyam agyana kritamatmana katam tvanata kripaya vartiramste chamam vina. Therefore, give up your anxiety due to ignorance of the self. You are now thinking of how they, who are helpless, poor creatures, will exist without you. So this caring for others, thinking others are dependent on me, is one of the prime motivations we have for a lot of our actions in this world. It's a lot of what drives us to do what we do. Isn't that a fact?
That's a fact.
I mean, about ourselves too. I'm thinking, if I don't make an endeavor to find food, if I don't make an endeavor to find a place to sleep, then I won't be able to take care of myself. And then most of us have somebody in our life that we feel some responsibility to, that we think, well, you know, if I don't take care of them, what will happen? And again, that motivates us. It motivates people to work, to cook, to clean, to do laundry, to spend time with people. Isn't that a fact? That we're thinking it's on me. When I did my dissertation, which was on job satisfaction, we looked at what motivates people in their job. How do people feel satisfied in their job? Why do people feel motivated and happy to work? And one of them is responsibility, a sense of responsibility. That if I don't do this, it won't get done. It's dependent on me. After all, if it's not dependent on me, why do it, right? If someone else is going to take care of it. I mean, some people want to do other people's jobs. That's another problem. But some people are like that. They want to do everything in the whole world. But for most of us, we feel that it's one of the things that motivate us. And we think, I did this. I'm the doer. And we get some satisfaction from our work like that and some motivation from our work like that, whether it's something simple like you're making Giwix or whether it's cooking the offering or cleaning the floor or something very complicated like trying to run the whole United States, whatever it may be. This is often our motivation. And here Narada is saying, this is a foolish motivation. It's due to ignorance, again. And this ignorance is what's causing your lamentation. You don't know who we are. Now, most of us think, well, if I didn't have this thing driving me, then I would simply be irresponsible. And I'd be miserable also because I wouldn't care about anything that I'm doing. I wouldn't want to do anything. I would just do nothing. Of course, we do have some great personalities who literally did nothing in their self-realization. Can we think of someone who did that?
The Buddha?
Maybe for part of his life.
That got immersed without doing much?
Huh?
That's what you're saying?
Are there some great enlightened souls who just don't do anything? They don't do anything to take care of their body. They don't do anything to take care of anybody else.
Rishabhdev,
at the end of his life.
Yeah.
Not during the most of his manifestation, but the end of his manifestation, he did nothing to take care of himself and nothing to take care of others. Who else?
Jai Bharat.
Yes, in his third life. Because he saw that he had a difficulty in his first life with thinking he was the protector, didn't he? He had been the king. And as the king, he's supposed to take care of all the subjects. Not only the humans, but the animals. That's fine. If she's making noise or whatever, you don't have to... It's fine. I think at this point, if I didn't like kids and tolerate their noise, I'd be in a big trouble. So, you know, this deer came, and the deer's mother had died, and the deer was just alone, and this kingly, kshatriya mood of his that he was supposed to have given up when he took vanaprastha, it came out again. I am the protector of the deer. And it caused him to take birth as a deer, and then in his third life, he's like, I'm not going to take care of anybody. He didn't even take care of himself. Who else? What other great enlightened being? Gorky Shardas Babaji. Yes, also. In fact, a lot of the Babajis, a lot of what Babaji life means is like that. You know, Madhavendra Puri didn't even beg for food. Whatever food just came. So not even taking care of others. They didn't even take care of themselves. Or there was a Vamsidas Babaji who was in Bhaktisiddhanta's time. And there was a person who traveled with him and said, I have not seen in the last 4 months, I've not seen him eat, drink, pass stool or urine, or sleep. So, you know, people who just, they made no effort at all. There's that devotee that Prahlad Maharaj met who was living like a python. You remember that? He was just lying down on the ground and Prahlad said, well, you're not making any effort to get food, but you're not skinny. How is that possible? You know, you've got fat on your bones. And he says, Krishna's taking care. So we have, in fact, Maharaj Yudhisthira is going to do this fairly soon. He and the Pandavas and Draupadi and Subhadra are going to give up all external manifestations of taking care of their body or anybody else. When the Pandavas travel north, renouncing the world, they don't even pay attention to their wives. Subhadra's only son died in the battle of Kurukshetra. Draupadi's five sons were killed by Aswatthama. They had nobody else. And still the Pandavas won. So we may think that having this mood that I don't, you know, Krishna's protecting means that I need to live like that. That's what it means to be a devotee. That's what it means to follow this instruction. That thinking that I'm the protector of myself or others is due to ignorance, and therefore we should all just live like avadutas. So I'd like to look at the different ways that we can think about protecting ourselves and others. I was thinking we could look at it through the modes of nature and also look at it in bhakti and finally look at Krishna's family. So in the mode of ignorance, people don't take care of themselves or others. Which is why if we try to imitate the activities of an avaduta, we'll probably just end up in the mode of ignorance. And in fact, that's exactly what's happened in our Hare Krishna movement. In the name of renunciation, in the name of dependence on Krishna, we thought that being an avaduta was a process. We thought it was a means for enlightenment. Just like it says with Rishabhdev, that this King Arhat, he thought, oh, this is the way I will become enlightened. And so he imitated that kind of behavior and ended up concocting a system of religion. That's not the way you become enlightened. It's sometimes, not always, a symptom of enlightenment. But not always. We see, like, Maharaj Yudhisthira didn't act like that when he was in the Grihastha Ashram. And the king, he didn't behave like that. Right? Rishabhdev didn't behave like that in the Grihastha Ashram as a king. They behave like that in the Vanaprastha Ashram or in the Sannyasa Ashram. And we don't even see that all the sannyasis and all the Vanaprasthas behave like that, traditionally. There's a lot of sannyasis in our tradition. They take care of themselves, and they may even be running a temple and taking care of others and taking responsibility for others, not their family anymore. So the mode of ignorance is you don't take care of yourself or others. People in the mode of ignorance, we had a neighbor in North Carolina, and whenever we would stop by their house, it looked like they never, as in never, cleaned their house. Just never. It looked like they never took out the trash. Actually, we had a neighbor in Detroit like that too. You know, you knock on their door and there's just bags of garbage all over the house, and their kitchen was so covered with boxes and pots that I didn't see how any cooking could go on there. You know, or people who, the way they eat, they just eat at McDonald's. You know, they just eat garbage food. I mean, even in terms of being a meat eater, they eat garbage food. So they don't take care of themselves. So if we try to imitate the avadutas, we become in the mode of ignorance, is what I've seen over and over and over again. That we try, like Prabhupada said, that Arjuna was trying to skillfully use Krishna consciousness as an excuse not to be Krishna conscious. So, you know, we can use Krishna consciousness as an excuse to be irresponsible. It's very easy to do, by the way. It's extremely easy to do that. To say, oh, this is Krishna conscious. And actually, it's just completely the mode of ignorance. What to speak of if just not just neglecting ourselves and others, but if we're mean to them. That's one of the austerities in the mode of ignorance, is if you torture the body and you torture the super soul within. I mean, here, Narada Muni is saying that you're feeling this way because you're ignorant. You're ignorant of the self. And the self also means the super self. You're not seeing the self and the super self. So people who do this sort of thing, you know, again, in the name of Krishna consciousness, I mean, we've seen people, they don't eat properly, they don't sleep properly, they don't eat proper prasadam that's good for their health, they're nasty to other devotees. And I'm sorry to say that we have a long history of this in the Hare Krishna movement. You know, I mean, I know one devotee whose husband, after a few months of marriage, he said, oh, this is all Maya, and he just dropped her off at Radhakund and said goodbye. You know, later he came back and got her, like maybe 6 months later. But you imagine just taking your wife and just dropping her off at Radhakund. You know, Western woman, young Western woman, just dropping her off at Radhakund. So this kind of thing has gone on, and people who just left their children, didn't take care of their children, you know, well, Krishna will take care. Krishna's the protector. And the children suffered, and the women suffered. And renunciates, most of whom didn't keep their renunciation, people who, you know, fell down from their renunciation, who would preach like this to the householders. So we've had a lot of mode of ignorance masquerading as detachment, and mode of ignorance masquerading as avadutas. And it's something that we really need to be careful. So then there's the mode of passion. So the mode of passion, you're very, very responsible. The people who are taking the bulk of the responsibility in the world are mode of passion people. In fact, human life is primarily in the mode of passion. And the mode of passion, you're taking responsibility because you are a dutiful, responsible person. And the epitome of the mode of passion is the good king. The word Raja means both passion and king. Not the medieval, you know, European kings. Not that kind of king.
The only king you've ever heard of.
The only kind of kings that we have, you know. Well, I think that the sort of kings maybe we've read about in the fairy tales as we were growing up. And the kind of kings we read about, most of them anyway, we read about some nasty kings in the Shastra too, but you know, the kind of kings we read about in the Shastra, who were dutiful. They would keep their word even if it meant their own death and destruction. Maharishivi, he said, I will protect you, pigeon, from the hawk. And the hawk comes and says, but you've got to protect me too. I'm also your citizen. And he said, but I've already promised to protect the pigeon. How can I also protect you? He said, well, give me something equivalent to the pigeon. He said, well, I can't take from anyone else. He said, I'll give you from my own body. And he kept cutting off pieces of his body to put on a scale to equal the pigeon to give to the hawk. And of course, it never worked because the pigeon and the hawk were actually demigods testing him, who then restored his body. But this was the view of the kings, particularly. Or Lord Ramachandra, of course, he's not in the mode of passion, but Lord Ramachandra, who banishes his wife because one person is critical. Could you imagine the politicians today? I mean, you know, the politicians today say, I don't care if I've done terribly sinful activities, I'm going to stay in office anyway. And Lord Ramachandra hadn't even done anything sinful, but this was the mood. Ranti Dev is the king who gave all of his food and water to people who came by. So this extreme taking care. And of course, the Kshatriyas usually did an extreme taking care of themselves, too. They were generally, I mean, we read it like in our Western fairy tales of the kings and the queens being particularly beautiful. And this is the mood of royalty, that they were in very good health. Even in our modern society, we think like that. And those are the people who are going to really take care of themselves. So this is the mode of passion. And most religion in the world today preaches primarily the mode of passion, maybe with some goodness. But most religion today in the world, family values, which is a very good thing compared to the mode of ignorance. It is. You know, in the mode of ignorance, some guy gets a girl pregnant and just says, go have an abortion. Or I don't care what you do, I'm out of here. Right? And that's the mode of ignorance. I don't take care of anybody. So much, 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 much better, you know, get married, have children, take care of your family, have a responsible job, contribute to the world, give in charity, do some good to the world, and get your name in the history books and get your statue up in the park, and you know, because that's what's motivating people in the mode of passion. What's motivating them is their own sense that I'm a good person. I am a good person. We'll be talking about this tonight with Manashiksha, Dharma Adharma. Give up all attachment to Dharma Adharma. And that's a lot of what motivates them. I am good. I am righteous. I follow the rules. I am responsible. And other people saying that to them. Those are the two things that motivate someone in the mode of passion. You are good. You are responsible. You're such a good husband. You're such a dutiful son. You're a good citizen. Or even, I'm going to be very frank, you're a good, loyal member of ISKCON. No, it can be very much like that. Yes, I'm a good American, I'm a good devotee, I'm a good member of ISKCON. Now, much better to think you're a good devotee than to just be a bad devotee. Does that make sense, everybody? Much better to think I'm loyal to my guru, I'm loyal to my guru's institution, than to think I'm a disloyal wretch. But that stuff can be very much in the mode of passion. Then the mode of goodness, what causes you to be responsible, is the feeling of peace you get inside. Which is very different than, I am a good person. But it's this feeling that I am doing the right thing, which is what Krishna talks about when he says those in the mode of goodness are motivated by duty. He's not meaning the kind of duty of, I am a good person and I am doing the right thing and I am responsible. That's Rajagun. But he means the sense that what I am doing is what I am meant to be doing. And I'm in doing it, I feel balanced and equipoised and happy. I feel joyful. In the mode of ignorance, there's no happiness. In the mode of passion, the only happiness is some sense enjoyment you get that you've earned through your sacrifices. So in the mode of goodness, I take care of my body and health because I meant to live in balance and harmony with the world. I take care of my family because that's the way I can be in balance and harmony with the world. And, you know, we always see some people who are inclined like this towards goodness. And the religions of the world teach a little bit of this. What I see, they mostly teach passion with a little bit of goodness. When they teach things about forgiveness and balance and inner harmony, they're talking about goodness. And you know that feeling of goodness. It's like this. You know, the mode of ignorance is like, I'm going to do whatever I want. And when you're a devotee, the mode of ignorance, there is devotional service in the mode of ignorance, Lord Kanto. When you're a devotee, the mode of ignorance is like, I'm so detached, I don't care about anybody. Mode of passion is, I am a good devotee. And I do the right thing because I am good. And the mode of goodness is, I am in harmony. I am balanced. I am equipoised. I am doing the good thing because it is the right thing to do. Not because I'm a good person and I want your praise, but I'm doing the right thing just because it is the right thing to do. And I feel so peaceful. And so detached, and so much in harmony. You've been around people like that, right? I'm sure we feel like that. So that's very much mode of goodness. Now, bhakti is very different. Bhakti is, I'm doing, Krishna, whatever you want me to do. My purpose is not just to be in harmony with the world separate from you because it feels good. It feels really good to be in harmony with the world, by the way. Much better than sense gratification, and a lot better than being nasty and irresponsible. But what feels the best is to be in harmony with the person Krishna. Not just to be in harmony with his material energy. And not just to be in harmony with the laws of the universe, but to be in harmony with Krishna as a person in a loving relationship. And when we're in harmony with a person with a loving relationship, sometimes they say, I want to eat, and sometimes they say, I don't want to eat. You know, when we were traveling here from New Vrindavan, the devotees packed us a huge meal. And I don't usually like eating in a car, so I was thinking, well, I'll eat when I get there. But getting there became later and later and later. And so I finally decided, okay, I'm going to eat in the car. So I ended up eating this big meal very late in the car, like right before we arrived. And we went to the Mehendi party, and the devotee hosting it kept offering me prasadam. You know, Janu and Rasa had made 14 pizzas. Right? And they looked really good. But I had just eaten. And I had to keep saying to her, I don't want anything. I don't know how many times she asked me, 10 maybe? You know, would you like something, would you like something? And I had to keep saying no. So when you have a personal relationship with someone, sometimes they say, I'm starving, and sometimes they say, I don't want to eat. Just like Prabhupada told one devotee, you're eating too much. And the devotee said, well, Prabhupada, you told me to eat a lot when I became a devotee. Prabhupada said, did you believe me then? Said, so believe me now. So sometimes Krishna says, go and take this responsibility in the world. Be the emperor of the world. Maintain all the subjects of the whole planet. Take care of a temple and maintain all the devotees there. Get married, have children, take care of your spouse, take care of your children. Take care of the cows. Take care of these cars. Take care of your body. And sometimes he says, don't. Sometimes he says, now it's time to not do that. Now it's time to retire from being the king. Now it's time to let someone else run the temple. Let someone else take over the cows. Now someone else is taking over the cars. Like we just had this, thinking this verse was very apropos for a wedding yesterday. So Krishna's saying to the mother and father, take care of this girl. And now he's saying, let somebody else take care of her. And if the person says, but Krishna, but Guru Maharaj, you told me to take care. He said, well, did you believe me then? Then believe me now. You know, Jai Dorje Maharaj wrote this book on vanity karma, on Ecclesiastes in the Bhagavad Gita, and one of the most famous verses of Ecclesiastes is, there's a time for everything, there's a season. You know, here we have a little two-year-old child, so if when this two-year-old child is 20, if her mother is still taking care of her in the same way, then she'll be disturbed, and she'll say, Mommy, leave me alone. Right, so here Johnny, he's almost 20. And several times this, you know, the last couple of days, he says, Grandma, just leave me alone. I'm not two anymore. So there's also, you know, what does Krishna want? What does Krishna want? And the mood in bhakti is not only what does Krishna want, but as Prabhupada says here, that we are just doing our duty. One should discharge his duty only for no one but the Lord can give protection. So I'm doing my work as a service. Now, what we teach people in general who are mostly in the modes of passion and ignorance is do your duty for the pleasure of God. People in the mode of passion, you still have to say, be responsible, be a good son, be a good husband, but do it to please God. And for those in the mode of goodness, we have to say, be in harmony with the universe to please God. But for those in bhakti, we're not trying to be a good person or even be in harmony with the material world. But we're simply trying to please Krishna because we want to love him. And Krishna's given us a job to do. Now that job usually corresponds to our what would be called varnashram. Varna means your natural career by your propensities. Ashram means your duties according to basically how old you are. You know, when you're young, your duty is to go to school. When you're a little kid, when you're in the youthful time, your duty is to have a career and take care of a family. When you're middle age, your duty is austerities and starting to take the world as your family to prepare for death. And in sannyas, your duty is to prepare for death and share your knowledge with the world. So generally, the service we do for Krishna is going to be very much like that. Whatever we would have done in our career, do it for Krishna. Whatever we would have done according to our age, do that for Krishna. But it might not be. It might not always be. It might be something else. And then, of course, we have our duties in bhakti, our japa, our worship of the deities, our visiting holy places, our taking prasadam. And those duties we're doing, Krishna asked me to do this duty, I do this duty. Krishna asked me to do that duty, I do that duty. How do we know what Krishna wants is another question, which we could perhaps discuss. But even higher than that, is coming to our eternal duty, our eternal service. We have an eternal service that has nothing to do with this body and mind and nothing to do at all. It has nothing to do with it. So in this life, I may naturally be an artist, or I may naturally be a ruler, or I may naturally be a teacher, or whatever I may naturally be that I'm using. But that's not me. It's my body and mind. In another life, I had other propensities. Now, maybe in this life, my inclination is to be a musician, but maybe in my last life, my inclination was to be a doctor. Like the devotees asked Prabhupada about his previous life, he said, I don't know, but I was told I was a sinless physician in another life. But in this life, he was a business person. So that's not who I am. In one life, I'm a male. In one life, I'm a female. I mean, these people who are so disturbed with the gender they have, you know, they just wait a little bit. A little patient. You know, we're changing genders. We're changing nationalities. You know, one life we're Indian. One life we're Brazilian. One life we're American. We're changing planets. Some lives were on the moon planet, some life were, you know, species and genders and jobs, and we're checking out all these. It's like people like to, you know, I want to go to an Italian restaurant, I want to go to a Chinese restaurant. So, yeah. I wonder what it's like to be, you know, African woman. I wonder what it's like to be a Chinese man. I wonder what it's like. And in this world, Prabhupada makes the point that we're all given protection by God according to our acquired position in the world. Because we might say, well, I have to be in there and protect because God doesn't protect everybody the way I want him to. I can't just let God be the protector. But we're being protected according to our karma, according to our desires on the material level. So the devotee sees like that. I'm doing my duty. I may appear to be the protector. Krishna's really protecting. And Krishna's protecting everyone according to their desires and deservedness. Somebody is meant to break their arm. Somebody is meant to be murdered. Somebody is... And can you stop that? I mean, I know people whose kids have been murdered or raped. Or can you stop it? One devotee I know, she was holding her 2-year-old child and walking, and she tripped, and she fell onto concrete. And the child fell first because she was holding the child in front of her, and she heard the child's head crack like a coconut. The child... fortunately lived, but it was very... She has now lifelong health issues from that. Actually, she has lifelong health issues from the treatment, because when a person is very near death, they'll give them treatment that can have consequences and side effects, because they're just like, we want to save the person's life. So she has ongoing issues from the medication and stuff that they gave. But you're holding your child in your arms. You know, I read once about a woman who was holding her young child in her arms somewhere in America, and a tornado literally ripped the child out of the mother's arms. So we're not, as Prahlad Maharaj says this, he said, a boat on the water cannot save a drowning man, physicians cannot save a patient, mother and father cannot protect the child. So the devotee is not only doing their duty for Krishna, but they're doing their duty with the mood that I'm not this body. This is not my eternal duty. This is not other people's eternal position. And whatever protection a person gets or seemingly doesn't get is due to their destiny and the will of God. And I am here doing my duty. I am not going to be able to change others' destiny. I can't even change my own destiny, can you? Materially speaking. I haven't been able to. Have you? I'm feeling sick today. Okay. Feel well. You know, I just can't. Or you're in poverty, you know. Get rich. Just, okay, money. It hasn't worked for me. I don't know if it's worked for any of you. So I can't do that for myself. I can't do that for others. So the devotee is operating with several mindsets. One is, I'm doing whatever Krishna asks. And generally, Krishna is going to ask me to work as if I were a responsible, dutiful, hardworking person in the world, but as a favor to him, because that's what Krishna would like me to do. You know, like this family has asked, would you take care of our son for us for a month? And, okay, I'll take care of you. So Krishna is asking us to take care of other people. There's a very famous Jewish story of this one rabbi, great sage. He and his wife had two sons, and very nice boys. They were very respected in the community. And one day when the husband was out teaching, the sons got a very serious illness and they both died very quickly. And when he came back, his wife met him at the door and said, my dear husband, some time ago a merchant was traveling through here and left a couple jewels with me for safekeeping. You know, in those days they didn't have banks. And today he came and asked for his jewels back. What should I do? He says, why are you even asking me this question? Of course, you have to return his property. So this is our actual situation. It's a situation with our body in general, our health, our intelligence, our wealth, the other people in our lives that we take care of. So this is the mood of the devotee, and the devotee sees that God is all good, God is all merciful. That if some other person that I love and feel responsible for, something happens to them, that there's some hand of God here. I try to be totally responsible, but I am not the controller. And the devotee mostly focuses on developing their internal relationship with Krishna. Not in this world. Our main focus should not be being a good person in this world for Krishna. We can start that way, it's all right to start that way, but we want to focus on realizing who we are and entering into Krishna's family. And I was really meditating on that this morning when we're chanting Hare Krishna. We often talk about Hare as being Radharani. But Hare is the whole internal energy of the Lord. I was meditating on that this morning because yesterday we had this big wedding and all this family is there and all the different parts of the family. And now we're again separated so quickly, you know. All the these different parts of family come together and we're just together really for a few hours. Isn't that freaky, you know? And then again, everybody dissipates. And Haladhar was saying, I wonder when we'll have the next family reunion. Maybe years. It says like that, we're like little straws in a river that come together and separate. So the devotee's main meditation should be, and especially after we've been chanting for a while, I want to join Krishna's family, where there is no question of protection and separation and your kid gets their head cracked open while you're carrying them. That doesn't happen. You know? It doesn't happen. And Krishna, I was meditating on, you know, Krishna is Krishna and Rama is Balaram and Hare is the internal energy. And what leelas there are where Krishna and Balaram are there with all their devotees. You know, like Sanatana Goswami describes how Krishna and Balaram are there and they're eating. Right? The cowherd boys are eating there with Krishna and Balaram, and Nanda Maharaj and Nanda Maharaj's brothers are there, Mother Yasoda is there, all the older women, and then the young gopis, they're serving the food that they've cooked, and the servants are all everyone in all of the rasas, they're there, right? And under Govardhan Hill, everyone is there. Of course, not so nice, I suppose, when Krishna's on Kali, everybody's there too. And Krishna and Balaram like to be surrounded by all of their family. That let the one become many. Prabhupada says, why does Krishna expand as a jiva? He said it's the same reason. He said, why does a man marry and have children? He wants to increase his pleasure. So we are all part of Krishna's family. We have an eternal relationship with Krishna and his family. We have an eternal family. Adbhava bhavita diyo manu jastitaiva sampropi rupa mahima sanayana bhushana sukta yameva nigamath patitaya stupanti. That we get a home and even furniture. Of course, it's all spiritual and alive. And even jewels. And we have of course there's no birth, but we have a mother and father and sister and brother, like Vasanatha Goswami describes that when Gopakumar goes back to the spiritual world, oh, here's your family. Here's your brother, here's your sister, here's your mother and father. And in our spiritual body, where there's no need of protection, there's no harm. You know, nobody gets murdered, nobody gets raped, nobody gets stolen from, nobody gets their head cracked open. There's no sense of that kind of responsibility or that sense that I'm the doer. And that's what we should be meditating on. Obviously, as long as Krishna asks us to work in this world for others' protection and justice, and we need to do that as a service. Krishna wants the devotees to do that. He does not want devotees to be irresponsible in the name of detachment. Unless Krishna says to you, go be an avaduta now. Which he may. Not likely. Wasn't Srila Prabhupada's mood. So not likely. But he might. But this would be our real meditation. Otherwise, we become like most of the other religions where, you know, just preach about being dutiful and ethical and moral, and you just go to the higher planets. So here, Narada Muni is, again, as we talked about yesterday, 2 days ago, he's speaking on all levels. He said, no matter what level you're seeing things on, don't be lamenting on any level. You shouldn't be lamenting for Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, and of course he's going to tell them very soon that not only should Yudhishthira not lament, but they're doing fine. In fact, they're doing very well. Dhritarashtra, in fact, is doing the best that he will ever do in that lifetime. When he goes to the forest to leave his body, he will attain what, by all logic, would have been unattainable for him. He will attain, by the grace of Vidura, he will attain enlightenment. So, questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions? Yes, Prabhu. Speaking about taking care of ourselves, you're going to need a nap today.
Absolutely.
Oh my God.
The beginning you were mentioning Jagbharat, and you said that he should have given up that mood of protection.
Yes.
So, is that a generality for the Vanaprastha Ashram? Well, that we should take a more objective approach.
A more detached view. Well, Vanaprastha Ashram is, of course, in between the Grihastha and Sannyas Ashram, as though some brahmacharis skip the Grihastha Ashram. So some brahmacharis go from the Brahmachari Ashram to the Vanaprastha Ashram. But the main two things you're giving up in the Vanaprastha Ashram is your varna and your gross and subtle sexual relationship between the husband and wife. Those are the two main things that you're giving up. Even in the world in general, retirement means you give up your occupation. Isn't that what we mean? Oh, he's retired. She's retired. What does that mean? It means you're not doing your occupation anymore. So what was his varna?
King.
He was the king. And he was supposed to give that up. It wasn't his responsibility anymore. Now, that doesn't mean that he should do nothing and be cold-hearted, but it was not his primary responsibility. And he did... like the right thing at the wrong time. And because he did the right thing at the wrong time, timing is a lot of what makes something in the mode of ignorance is just it's the wrong time. Right? And you read the Bhagavad Gita, 17th, 18th chapter. So it's not just the wrong thing, it could be the right thing at the wrong time. So yeah, it wasn't his duty. And another nice example of this is with Ram and Sita. When Ram and Sita went to the forest on the order of Kaikeyi, basically. And after they saw Bharat, after they made the agreement with Bharat that Ram would technically still be the king and Bharat was just ruling in his stead by worshipping Ram's shoes, They were traveling. I think it was after that. I don't think it was before that. Maybe it was before that. I haven't read the Ramayana for quite a while. So I may be making a mistake. But at one point, Ram was asked by the sages in the forest, we need to be protected from the Rakshasas. And Ram immediately said, yes, I give you my word. I will protect you. And when they left, Sita said to Ram, my dear husband, I think you've done something wrong. We're in the forest. We're exiles. You have no business acting as a kshatriya here in the forest. And Ram said, well, first of all, I already gave my word, so that's right or wrong. That's what I'm going to do, which is a very kingly kind of mood to do. And then he said, and anyway, I really am. I haven't really taken vanaprast, even though I'm a vanaprastam living in the vana. Vana literally means forest. Some people call it varnaprast, but that's completely wrong. It's vanaprast. You're living in the forest. A forest dweller is literally what it means. He said, although I'm living in the forest, I'm in the grihastha ashram. In fact, it was, I think, Virad who accused Ram and Lakshman. He said, you know, what is these ascetics carrying bows and arrows and traveling with a woman? He said, he basically said, you're mixing your ashrams and varnas here. If you're wearing tree bark, these two men wearing tree bark with matted hair, traveling in the forest at that point without a home, but yet you're carrying bows and arrows as if you're kshatriyas and you're with a woman as if you're a grihastha. What's going on here? And Virad used that as his excuse. He said, because you're mixing your varnas and ashrams, therefore I'm going to attack you and kill you and eat you because you're doing adharma. This was also the Gandharva, can't remember his name, who attacked the Pandavas after they had left Ekachakra. And he said, you're not properly in an ashram. You finished your studies, but you haven't gotten married. So you're not properly, and nor are you in the Vanaprastha ashram. So you've left the Brahmacharya ashram, but you haven't gone to either the Grihastha or the Vanaprastha ashram, and therefore you've lost your potency. But Ram said to Sita, I'm not actually in the Vanaprastha ashram. I haven't given up the Grihastha ashram. Your varna is done in the Grihastha ashram. Again, even we know in the world. So students, retired, and dead people don't have a job. Correct? So the Brahmacharis, the Vanaprasthas, and the Sannyasis, they don't have a job. They don't have an occupation. One of the criteria for skipping the Grihastha ashram is, am I willing to go through life without ever exhibiting a varna? So yeah, Ram said, I'm not a Vanaprastha. I'm wearing tree bark and matted hair because that's the order of Kaikeyi to do that. And I'm living in the forest just to fulfill my father's word, but I haven't changed my ashram. I haven't changed my situation, therefore I can still be the protector. Now, doing the right thing that's not your job, what does Krishna say? Better to do your own duty, even if imperfectly, rather than to take someone else's duty even perfectly. Better to be destroyed following your own duty than to take someone else's duty and do it perfectly. So what our duty is may change. What my duty was when I was 20 may not be my duty when I'm 50. Is that okay? Yeah, he was doing someone else's duty. That was the duty of the rulers. So you could have said, well, it was an emergency, but he should have dealt with it then just as an emergency briefly.
Instead of taking it up, that he takes care of the deer?
Yes, instead of taking, this is my long-term responsibility. It really messed him up. Anything else? Yes, Prabhupada.
This is, again, going with the same pastime of Maharaj Bharat. I was reading it the other day and I had this question. Can I ask that question now? Or?
Sure. I may not answer it, but you can ask it. No, go ahead.
I was wondering that it was mentioned that Maharaj Bharat was in a very high platform in terms of devotion service. And yet, when he saw the deer, like one thing led to another, and then later part of his life, he even stopped following his devotional practices. And he was like lamenting for the deer in such like a strange way, as like somebody would do it.
Yeah, he really, really kind of fell off the deep end.
Yeah, I mean that language used is like something like even fell in love with like deity or partner like that. So I was wondering that what really happened Because Prabhupada is like saying...
I don't know what really happened.
Part
no, I don't think any of us know what really happened. We'd have to be super soul or in Bharat's mind. You know, you never really know the consciousness of someone else. But just looking at the scriptures, at the very end of the pastime, it's where Jed Bhart with Maharaj Rahugana, it's one of those purports. It's all the way at the end, where Prabhupada says that his problem was that he didn't consult with his guru. He was staying at Pulaha Ashram, and that he should have consulted with his guru. So if you're not consulting with your guru, not that you should consult with your guru about everything, not that, you know, dear Guru Maharaj, should I buy a red Murdunga or a blue Murdunga? Your poor Guru Maharaj isn't going to have any time to chant their own rounds because all their disciples are going to be asking them, should I buy a blue or red Murdunga? You know, they do want disciples to be a little mature. Or maybe a lot mature. Like one devotee who wrote to Srila Prabhupada, begging to remain your useless servant. Think about that for a minute. You know. So, not that Prabhupada said we should all feel a fool in front of our guru, but not that we remain fools. You know, begging to remain your foolish servant, begging to remain your useless servant. So that's not very pleasing. But when it comes to major things in our life, and Bart was starting to become aware that his affection for the deer was impacting his sadhana. He was becoming aware of that. He was noticing that when he was chanting and meditating, he wasn't meditating anymore. He was just saying the mantras and his mind was on the deer. And Prabhupada says, if you're chanting Hare Krishna and you're meditating on material things, then your chanting is useless. Then he pauses for a long time. He says, or it will take a long time. So Bharat Maharaj noticed that he was meditating on the deer instead of the sun god while he was chanting. But he didn't go to Pulaha Muni. So if you don't go to your authority when you should, that's indicative that there must be some what? What contamination is there? Envy, maybe some. If I don't consult when I should consult, what does that mean? What do I have?
Pride.
Pride.
Or fear.
Pride or fear that my authority will tell me to do something I don't want them to tell me to do. Attachment, fear, and anger are all wrapped up together, Krishna says. So it's interesting with Manashiksha, which we're going to start studying, Krishna willing, tonight. So Raghunathas Goswami says, Sadadamban Hitva, always give up pride. And pride isn't completely gone until prema. I mean, it'll be Sunday morning that we'll be doing... or Sunday evening, I'm not sure how I'm going to structure it, but we'll be doing text 7 of Manashiksha. The pride that can remain in the heart of even a very, very advanced devotee. One thing that I emphasize in teaching Manashiksha is that Manashiksha is really written, although it can be used by anybody, it can be read and applied by the new devotee. And frankly, even I had one gentleman at one of my seminars who was just coming to Krishna consciousness. And he said, I can apply all these principles to my day trading on the stock market. And I thought, well, that wasn't probably Raghunathas Goswami's intention. But although the principles can be applied in Manashiksha to anybody, and even new devotees, the book is really written for at least Majjhima devotees. It's a book for the serious practitioner of bhakti. The first word in the book is guru. Unlike, say, Upadesha Amrita, where it's Purch Vacho Vegam. But the first word is guru, and he's talking about having love for guru. So how are you going to have love for guru if you don't have a guru? You know, you can understand the audience of the book. And in the third verse, he says, sa ragam, people who already have some awakening of raga, of a particular attachment for the Lord, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about. You've already had some awakening that I'm Krishna's servant or Krishna's cowherd boyfriend or Krishna's parent. That may have already awakened. And yet, in verse 7, he's talking about this lingering desire in the heart for honor and prestige. For being a devotee. Wanting to be honored for being a devotee. Like the ordinary person in passion wants to be honored for being dutiful. They want to get the medal, you know, you were a good military, you were a good husband, good father. They want it on their tombstone. Loving father and husband. Loving wife, mother, sister, right? So that this is still in the heart of the devotee, this, I want people to notice. I want people to notice how detached I am. I want people to notice how pure I am. You I was talking to some of my friends recently about this conundrum when you're a preacher. When you're an avaduta and you're a babaji, you don't really need to worry about reputation at all. Who cares what anybody thinks of you? I mean, except God. You're supposed to care what God and Guru think of you, but everybody else, they don't care. Like Gorkhasura Das Babaji, he just really didn't care. He would be heavy with people. He was really heavy with people. He just didn't care. But when you're a preacher, you have to care. Like Lord Chaitanya said, one black spot on a white cloth. He said, I'm not even going to meet with the king. Why? He said, it will damage my reputation. So when you're a preacher, you have to care about what people think. You have to care about your reputation. I said, but suppose the only reason you're preaching is for reputation, then it's a problem. If what's driving you to be a preacher is I want to be respected as a religious, righteous person, and therefore, to maintain my position as a preacher, I have to care about reputation. But this problem exists, or can exist, even with very advanced devotees. And we'll be studying in Manashiksha that the cure for getting rid of this desire for being honored as a devotee, which Raghunath Das Goswami compares to an unchaste, disloyal woman who's dancing in the heart eating dog meat, the dog meat representing the fame itself, fame and honor, and the disloyal woman representing the desire for such fame and honor. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says she's dancing with her boyfriend called deceit and pretentiousness, because as soon as you want honor, then you're deceitful. And Bart became deceitful. His chanting was deceitful, wasn't it? Yes? He says the way to get cured is to be the servant of the generals in the Lord's army. And that's exactly what Srila Prabhupada says in that purport, that he didn't go to his guru. So the way to get rid of this pride, the way to get rid of this I am this, which in this case was I am the protector, was he had to become the servant of his guru. He had to become the servant of a general in the Lord's army, and he did not do that. And because he did not do that, therefore the dancing woman and the heart eating the dog meat persisted and gave rise to what Raghunath Das Goswami calls bathing in donkey urine. It gave rise to this doing your behavior externally while your mind is on material things. Now you could also look at it, and it may be the case. Some of our acharyas explain, so it may be the case that Bharat, that this was his lila to give us an example of what not to do. And I don't really know, was this something that actually genuinely happened to him? Or is he a... I've seen these t-shirts, you know, if you can't be a good example, at least be a warning. So, you know, sometimes the devotees take that role, which goes back to the other thing we discussed here, that when we're responsible for ourselves and others, we're doing it as a service to the Lord. And the Lord might ask us, not only might the Lord ask us to take sannyas, or might not, you know, the Lord might ask us to retire from being temple president or something like that. But the Lord might ask us to show a bad example. And if we're attached to this idea that I have to be a good person in the world, that's going to be tough. What people showed bad examples as their service? Okay, in what respect? Oh, that she just took shelter of Krishna.
The gopis.
Oh, the gopis. Yes, okay. Yeah, the gopis. Yes.
Is that their service, though, or is that...
Oh, it's definitely their service.
A circumstance.
Okay. No, it's definitely their service.
To leave their husbands.
Yes. Yes, it's their service to say, to show an example that one has to be willing to drop all worldly duties and prestige if the Lord calls you to do so. Yes.
Well, not only that, it's like the ultimate adharma.
Yes.
For a woman to, in the dead of night.
Yes. So they were willing to show that ultimate adharma as a service. Because you know what? Sometimes that's required. In Bhagavad Gita 9:30, Abhichet Chutarachara, even if they perform the most abominable activities. And Prabhupada says there in the purport that generally our spiritual material duties are parallel, but sometimes they come into conflict. I mean, I could tell you when I did that, I disobeyed my mother to join the Hare Krishna movement. Now, that doesn't mean anything to us in America. It just so you disobeyed your mother to join the horde. Well, big deal. Everybody's disobeying their mother. Mm-hmm. But in a civilized society, if your mother says you don't join that society, then you don't join that society. And that was the beginning, middle, and end of it. I mean, Kunti said to the Pandavas, whatever arms you brought, you have to share. And they had to do it. I mean, they wanted to anyway, and there's other parts of that story, but Jamadagni said to Parsaram, kill your mother. And he did it. That was the mood of obedience to one's parents. Now, my father gave me his blessings to become a devotee. I mean, I haven't become a devotee yet, but just in a manner of speaking. But my mother certainly did not. She was upset for a decade. And that was a very adharmic thing that I did. From the Vedic perspective, from the perspective of karma, that was a vikarma thing to do. And so the gopi's example is pertinent. Or sometimes, you know, we were printing and distributing books illegally in the Soviet Union. You're supposed to obey your government. That's dharma. That's in the shastra. You're not supposed to disobey your government. But for Krishna, we can do that. And without the gopi's example, how would we know to do that? So it's necessary that they do that. Krishna could come without the gopis. I mean, most of his incarnations, he doesn't exactly bring the gopis. Right? Comes as Ramchandra, he doesn't do anything like that. So, but the other examples also needed. Who else, what other devotees had at their service to do something that was materially adharmic?
Yeah. Yeah.
Bali Maharaj, disobeying his guru. Oh, well, that's really a little different. And the reason it's really a little different is he wasn't externally appearing as a devotee. So he wasn't setting an example for the devotees. That's completely rustica stuff. But any other person who was externally a devotee and setting an example for the world, who set an example of something adharmic in Krishna service.
Arjuna
killing his guru and his grandfather. As a service. That we may be called, you know, most of us are not going to be called to that level of surrender. But such an extreme example is there that when I look at my level of surrender that I may say, okay, well, if Arjuna could do that, I could do that. I'm thinking about Bhishma. So Bhishma and Drona, but especially Bhishma, who's one of the Mahajanas, and he took the side of the Kurus. As a lesson in what not to do. So the gopis are doing something adharma as a lesson of what to do in some circumstances. And even Arjuna, what to do. But Bhishma is actually giving an example of what not to do. Don't put yourself in a position where you are obligated to materialistic persons. Because then you're going to end up fighting against God. So don't do that. And that even if you're such a great personality as Bhishma, you're going to become compromised and you're going to become defeated if you do that. Your physical strength, your vows, none of that will protect you if you become beholden to materialistic evil persons. Of course, there was also a rasa element in that, that Bhishma wanted to be facing Krishna in the battlefield and not on Krishna's side, that Bhishma wanted to have this chivalrous relationship with Krishna. That's on another layer. Or what about Yudhisthira in the gambling match? So Yudhisthira also set an example in Krishna's service of what not to do. I mean, when they all married Draupadi, Yudhisthira said, I can't even think something adharmic. He said, if a thought comes to my mind, that for me is evidence that it's dharma. Could any of us say that? My evidence for what's dharma is whatever I think? Right? Like you said to me the other day, well, I must be ADD because my mind's like a monkey. I said, my dear, everybody's mind is like a monkey. Anybody have a mind that's not like a monkey? It's ridiculous. So, you know, that's... There's some example there that even Dharmaraj, who gambled because of dharma, because Dhritarashtra was asking him, and he was a kshatriya, and he couldn't refuse the order of his senior, and he couldn't refuse a challenge. Out of dharma he did it, and he's Dharmaraj, and still, gambling is so awful and terrible. that you're going to think, I'll do one more time and then I'll win back what I've lost. One more time, I'll win back what I've lost. One more time, I'll win back what I've lost. One more time, I'll win back what I've lost until your life becomes disgraced. So that we're going to think, well, if Yudhisthira could have a problem, then what to speak of me? If Bhishma could have a problem, what to speak of me? If Judd Barrett could have a problem. So it may have been that. Judd Barrett may have been playing that role. So one could say, wow, you know, if Judd Barrett messed up and if he could fall down from that elevated of a position of devotional service because he didn't consult with his guru, who am I not to consult with my guru? Who am I to go back to a service that was already I've already retired from, thinking that I'll be able to do it if he couldn't do it? So it's possible that he was playing that role. I don't know. At least some of the acharyas present like that. But often different acharyas will have different viewpoints on a thing. So what was Bharat's actual thinking, his actual role? I don't know. That's between him and Krishna. And they haven't let me in on their discussion. So.
That's
a Goswami. He also said a bad example?
Getting out of the prison.
Oh, how we get out of the prison, yes. But that's more the kind, like with the gopis. That's more... So we see some of the devotees, they set an adharmic example. As surrender to Krishna might mean doing something adharmic. And some of the devotees, they set a bad example as, even if you're a devotee, don't do this, it's going to mess you up. So I see there's sort of, and there may be more than those two, but those are two I can think of. That as part of their, and think how surrendered you'd have to be. Let's think about this for a minute. Bhishma and Yudhisthira. How much people in that kind of a position are generally attached to their good reputation for being dharmic. As we said, the epitome of Rajagun is the Raja. And generally people who are like that, the world emperor. Bhishma was the leader of the world. Most respected, such a. So he was. He was the top of the top of the top. So generally, for a person like that to do something dishonorable for which they would be criticized, wow, to do that. And they actually got criticized. That wasn't an example like the gopis of, well, we love Krishna so much, we're willing to be criticized out of our love for Krishna. They were playing a role of, don't do this. No matter how elevated you are, don't do this. We still criticize Yudhisthira thousands of years later. We still criticize Bhishma. The acharyas criticize them. To be willing to play that role for Krishna. Would I be willing to play that role for Krishna? Probably not. You know, Krishna came and said, Urmila, would you be willing to have, you know, the acharyas for thousands of years used you as a bad example? I'd say, can you give me another job to do? I don't really know if I want to sign up for that one. Okay, we've gone very late. We should end here. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.